From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Detroit Auto Show and the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas are both going on this week, and they're sharing a lot more than space on the calendar. Cars are becoming rolling platforms of e-technology, the web on wheels, and more, loaded with apps for custom radio and Facebook updates, weather and traffic patterns, monitoring your health and heart rate, talking to you, to the police, to the Applebee's on the corner, talking to other cars. This hour on Point, your car as the web on wheels and more. You can join the conversation. How plugged in, wired up, webbed out do you want your car to be? A little? A lot? And where does the internet ultimately take the automobile? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will go to Detroit and the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas this hour. With us first for the big auto picture, fresh out of the Detroit Auto Show, is Michelle Krebs, senior analyst at Edmunds.com, a site that tracks the auto industry. Michelle Krebs, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We're going to get into all kinds of gadgetry and electronics and big arcs of technology and where all that's going. But the U.S. auto industry itself is showing some pretty flush numbers for the first time in a long time, actually increasing market share. That's something we haven't heard since the 80s. What's the big picture here, Michelle?
Well, the big picture is that the economy is getting a little better. We may not all be feeling that, but it is. All of the automakers are, especially those here in Detroit, are making a good comeback. All of them posted above average sales for 2011. And Chrysler, by the way, had the biggest increase with 26% increase over the year before.
Of course, they were all way down.
Well, absolutely. So let's not forget that. But they're out there with some great new product, along with all of the competitors, by the way.
Domestic manufacturers still have less than half the U.S. market. Let us not forget, 47.1% in 2011. But this was the biggest growth in market share since, was it 1987, 88? What is that? Just about all the earthquake problems in Japan, or is there something on the positive side in the U.S. that's pushing that?
It's two things. Toyota and Honda were down because of the earthquake. They just have not been able to regain their footing since then. We have to give credit where credit's due. The big three have been really putting out some terrific new products, and they've gotten their financial houses in order so they can, you know, do a better job of marketing and that kind of thing.
Michelle, what do you see in the actual cars that are being rolled out, ready for sale in the upcoming year, and concept cars? What's new? What's happening?
Well, in the way of new cars, let's see. The highlights from the auto show, I would say Ford really has the star. The Ford Fusion is brand new, coming out later this year, completely redesigned. If you look at the front, it looks a little like an Aston Martin, which, you know, Ford used to own, the Aston Martin mm-hmm. brand.
That's not bad.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
No, it's beautiful. Over at General Motors, they're introducing a new Cadillac to go, they're called the ATS, to go head-to-head with the BMW 3 Series.
So a smaller Cadillac, that would be.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we've got a smaller one, and then they also have a bigger one. Two new Cadillacs coming out this year. At Chrysler, they have the Dodge Dart. It's a desperately needed small car because Chrysler hasn't had anything in that. And that is important here because it's an offspring of the Fiat-Chrysler marriage. It's got Fiat-developed engine, and the architecture underneath it is actually an Alfa Romeo.
We're going to talk a lot about technology in this hour. The technology a lot of Americans care about most is fuel efficiency. How's that look in the new generation of cars coming out, Michelle?
Well, that's the big story. Last year was the year of the small car, and we saw a lot of 40-mile-per-gallon small cars. This year, we are going to see a real battle in that midsize sedan segment. Things like the Ford Fusion, the new Toyota Camry, the new Honda Accord is coming out, the Chevy Malibu, and the Volkswagen Passat just came out. We're going to start seeing those same kinds of fuel economy numbers in that segment of the market. And I think you're going to see that going forward. You know, we'll see trucks get more fuel efficient. We have to. There's 2016 mm-hmm. fuel economy regulations coming in, and 2025, we're looking at over 50-mile-per-gallon requirement.
And then there's all the E stuff on the dashboard. I think you were sitting in a Tesla this week, Michelle. Does it feel like a sporty iPad?
Well, yeah, it was. I liked the car better than I thought, but wow, it had this I guess you'd call it a dashboard. The center console is basically an iPad, but a big one. It's a 17-inch screen. Oh. And in fact, we're seeing that in other cars. You know, the Dodge Dart has a very large touch screen for navigation and all that kind of thing.
A 17-inch, effectively, computer screen in your car. I mean, that's bigger than what I've got at home. What is all that for?
Oh, navigation, climate control, all of your music, audio systems. It's amazing. I mean, you can pull up, you know, your stock quotes, the New York Times, whatever.
Facebook page updates, and it's cool, but it's kind of wild at the same time.
Michelle, yes, and distractive, and that's going to be a big issue going forward, of course.
We'll talk about that, how to manage this merger that's going on the highways. Michelle, stand by there in Detroit, if you would. The other big show going on this week beyond the North American International Auto Show, the Detroit Auto Show there, is, of course, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Hiawatha Bray is technology reporter and columnist for the Boston Globe. He's in Las Vegas. Hiawatha, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Oh, glad to be here.
So what's happening in this mashup of car and web, Hiawatha?
Well, it's happening, and it's here. I mean, one of the most striking things that's happened at CES in the last several years is that it's almost become an auto show. There are cars all over the place here. That new Ford Fusion that Michelle was talking about is on display here, too. Other cars like the Karma, which is, what, a $100,000 high-tech hybrid from a company called Fisker Automotive. They've got that on display here. There are cars everywhere, and they are indeed just crammed with electronic technology.
And auto executives right in the middle of consumer electronics. I mean, you've got Steve Ballmer with giving a keynote there from Microsoft and Intel CEO and Qualcomm, but there's Ford Motor Company CEO Alan Mulally right in the mix.
That's right. And the CEO of Daimler-Benz was here giving a keynote as well. Because, I mean, it depends on who you ask. You're hearing as much as like 20% of the cost of a car now is the software that goes into it. I've read some estimates. There's this guy in Germany who says that basically there's like something like 100 million lines of software code now in a typical luxury car. It's incredible.
Wow.
Almost everything inside the car is computerized. There'll be 30 or 40 processors sitting inside. And there's a guy over at MIT I interviewed the other day, Brian Reamer, who's really concerned about this. Not because there's anything wrong with the technology, but because I don't think we've mastered what you might call the human factors engineering of how people can use all this stuff and not get themselves killed.
We'll look at that. That sounds like a big challenge. But what is headed onto that dashboard and beyond in the car as the web and cars marry up here, Hiawatha? What kind of capacity? What kind of apps? What kind of functions?
Well, it depends. I mean, we've got what we've already got out there, but you know, of course, Ford has this concept car I wrote about called the Evos that is basically it's looking to the future of what people call connected cars, and I think that's the real heart of what's really going to change. It's a really important idea. There's no reason why your car should not be constantly in touch with a network that includes other cars, that includes possibly emergency services. It could include the manufacturer and so on. And so all the cars on the road are constantly exchanging data, and that could do things like help you avoid traffic accidents. It could do things like help you keep the car running properly. But it also means that you can sync the car with your life. So this Evos, for example, can actually have your appointment calendar inside the car. It downloads it from the web, say from Google Calendar, and it knows when you've got to be at a particular place. So the car can actually ping you on the phone and says, traffic is going to be so bad, if you want to get there, you need to leave now. You could have a car do that, and they're working on it.
So if the cloud through the web is all hooked up to my car, what it's talking about my schedule, it's plugged into essentially everything I've got in my home computer or really in the cloud through Google or however you're accessing it.
Or whatever company, you use.
We're reading the smartphone is driving an awful lot of infotainment and information that's going to end up right there on your dashboard as well, Hiawatha.
Absolutely. I mean, there are two different approaches. You have the, you might call it the OnStar approach, which has actually been around for like 15
long
years,
time.
But now it's really coming into its own. In OnStar, you build a phone into the car. It's right there as part of the hardware. Then you have the Ford Microsoft Sync approach that's been very successful as well. And that's the one where the car is all computerized, but the actual connection to the outside world comes from your phone. As soon as you get into the car, your phone syncs up via Bluetooth, and now you're connected to the internet as well. So there are two different ways of doing it. It's the smartphone way or the build it right into the car way.
Michelle Krebs, how do you feel about all of this? I mean, we're reading today here, somebody from, was it Ford or GM? Ford, saying, you know, in a way, the auto industry feels powerless to prevent this wave of e-tech coming into the car. We can't stop the prolific growth of consumer technology. This is the CTO at Ford. We can't stop people bringing their phones into their cars. You know, we want to help make them do it as safely as possible. Is the auto industry leading here, or are they feel like they're racing to catch up with people's habits as they integrate all these electronics into their lives, Michelle?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, if you look at General Motors OnStar, that, like you said, that was 15 years ago, and look how far we've come. And yes, they are, in many ways, they are racing to catch up. I think the big issue we're going to face is, this is an awful lot of stuff going on in the car. And, you know, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is very concerned about the distracted driving.
Well, they were just saying, don't do cell phone, don't do texting. This is that on steroids.
How is that going to work? How is that going to be enforced? So we've got to figure out a way to do it as safely as possible. And I think we're not even close to being there yet.
What do you think, Hiawatha?
It's got to be built into the car. It has to be, because then you can do things like one of the things they're doing, in like some of the cases of what Ford, GM are doing, is they will program the car so that certain things will automatically be locked out when you start to drive. If you're just using your cell phone in the car, there's no way of enforcing that.
Mm-hmm.
If you build it into the car or connect it to the car, then as soon as you start driving, the car itself can say, nope, you can't do that. That's what they're doing.
You talked with the Toyota executive saying that they're going to try to create a curated environment, watching out for your safety on what comes in. On the other hand, you know, the same way people brag about horsepower, it seems inevitable they'll brag about all the stuff that they're going to bring into that car. Hiawatha Bray, stand by there in Las Vegas, if you would. Michelle Krebs with Edmunds.com. So good of you to be with us from Detroit today, Michelle. Thank you so much for your time and insights.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about automakers and the internet merging on the American highway, your car as the web on wheels, and more. Hiawatha Bray of the Boston Globe is with us from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, where automobiles and auto executives are evident in a very big way. The web is coming into your car if it's not there already, with all kinds of implications on the road and down the road. American automakers, among others, eager to talk about all this, here's a video introducing the Ford Evos concept car that Hiawatha mentioned.
Imagine that you're a busy professional who commutes to work in the city. You love to drive and have a little fun whenever you can. That's why you own the ultra-smart, cloud-connected Ford Evos concept. The cloud is the place where all of your important data and personal information are stored. But thanks to the Ford Evos concept, you don't even have to think about that. Your Ford Evos knows all about your preferences, your needs, your health, your work schedule, and more. The car has the power to pull and process information from the cloud to provide you with a seamless, connected lifestyle.
Your preferences, your needs, your health, your work schedule, and more. That car is going to be your best buddy. It may know more than you like, but it's got a lot of excitement around it. Ford CEO Alan Mulally spoke on a keynote panel at the Las Vegas show yesterday. This is a Consumer Electronics Show, not the Detroit Auto Show. He said that the ideas between car designers and the tech geeks are really flowing.
We've chosen a strategy with Sync and My Ford where we want to collaborate with everybody, and then we manage the interface with your hands on the wheels, your eyes on the road, and everything with voice to actually improve the driving experience. But the collaboration we're doing with everybody here and the ideas that are flowing is absolutely fantastic.
That flow is coming right for your car. Hiawatha Bray of the Boston Globe is with us from Las Vegas in the midst of the show there. We'll hear from a top Ford researcher in a moment. Detroit is reaching out to high-tech centers around Boston and in Silicon Valley, you name it, all over. Hiawatha, we've got all kinds of response to this. I mean, you wrote about it, others are. But online here's Jason says, you know, in time, don't you think cars will be self-driving? Due to the ever-increasing accuracy of GPS, lane-keeping assist, and bumpers, sensors, the car will end up becoming a mobile living room where the steering wheel will retract, the driver's seat will swivel, let the socializing begin, Jason writes. I'm 38, and I think this can happen in my lifetime. Is that where we're headed, Hiawatha?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just got through the story I wrote. I was talking to one of the R&D executives at General Motors. He said 10 years. 10 years, and there'll be cars out on the road driving themselves. Because that's the weird thing about this. Each of these technologies was developed to solve a specific problem, but soon engineers realized that if you link them all together and connect cars to a network, we already have all of the individual components necessary to build self-driving cars. It exists right now.
So all the work I would have to do is plug in my destination at the beginning of my trip and then, kick back?
Yeah, exactly. The problem is, of course, building a complete infrastructure that can support that safely. I mean, you're going to have to share the road for years to come with cars that will still be driven by people driving themselves. So you got to figure out some way to live with that. And you've got to figure out some way to manage these huge networks of cars that are constantly interacting with each other. But all of the necessary components, the basic technology, is right there. We already have cars that automatically slow down if they're getting too close to the car in front of them. We have cars that tell you if you've got somebody in your blind spot.
Yeah.
All this stuff, the sensors are in the cars, and now we're putting the cars connected to the computer network. The third leg of the stool, which is only just beginning to be thought about, nobody's doing it yet, is that you're going to have the cars talking to the cars next to them.
And that would be on short-range radios, write, special frequency designated by the federal government,
the
most likely.
Already set aside a frequency for this purpose. That's right.
So every car would be constantly broadcasting its exact location, its speed, direction of travel, notifying all the cars around it. If it slows down, others are going to slow down like a flock of birds kind of.
Exactly. You got it. That's the whole idea. And they're already working on it. But it's going to be some time before you see that. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of getting people to accept it. And I think that's going to be a bit of a challenge.
Well, what about automakers? And are they sure the market wants this? Here's another on-point listener who writes, hey, how about a foot massaging gas pedal, three TVs in the windshield, a keyboard on the steering wheel for working on the way to office, a pop-up deep fryer if you want to make your own donuts. This listener says, I see at least another $4K being added to the price of cars with all this Rube Goldberg junk. He doesn't want it. What about that?
Well, yeah, I'm sure there are plenty of people who don't want it, but I think we're going to end up getting it anyway. I don't know to the extent to which self-driving cars will be somehow forced upon us, but I don't see any way around the connected car because A, most people will actually want that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know too many people who wouldn't want it. And B, it opens up all kinds of possibilities for improving the efficiency and the safety of cars. I mean, if you can have a network that can automatically prevent traffic jams because it's just telling all the cars automatically, don't go that way, go this way. I mean, there are just so many potential savings in terms of fuel, safety, and so on that I just don't see this not happening.
Brave new world if you want it. Hiawatha Bray, stand by in Las Vegas. Lots of callers here. Simsbury, Connecticut. Tim is calling. Tim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I do not want a mobile web on wheels. I will hang on to my 1994 car forever. I do not have any interest in paying a premium price for all these gadgets, and I don't trust human beings to be able to handle it.
But you don't want to update your Facebook page and check on the weather in Timbuktu while you're driving to work?
I have no interest in that, Tom. I drive a car to get from point A to point B. Call me old-fashioned, but I do not want this. I think it's a big mistake.
So what if, Tim, what you're told, that look, the trade-off is the cars are going to talk to each other. You won't even have to touch the steering wheel. Just get in, read your newspaper, electronically, on your way to work.
It's hard to envision that, but I guess it's coming. But like I said, I guess I'm just too old-fashioned for this. I don't know. I mean, I appreciate the web for what it is on my laptop computer, but I just don't need to take it on the road.
Yeah, we got it. Let us talk with our gang here about that and get one more. Gail in New York, North Creek, New York. Gail, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just think this is one more attempt of the government to make it an electronic police state in this country, putting GPS on cars to track people, more invasion of our privacy, and I think it's nonsense.
Electronic
baloney.
Yeah, okay, a bunch of baloney. Not pious baloney, but e-baloney in this case. Gail, thanks for that. Hiawatha, I'll bring that to you, but let me get also from Las Vegas, Doug Newcomb in here, a senior editor of the technology section at Edmunds.com. They're all over cars, and of course he's in Vegas because there's so much car stuff there. Doug, first two calls, and it's pushback. How are the automakers reading the market for this? They must believe that there's a generation that's going to embrace this.
Yeah, Tom, and that's exactly correct. And the generation, our people are embracing it now. What we find, we're a car buying website.
Mm-hmm.
What we find is that it's really helping to sell cars. Ford has been a pioneer in it. They were one of the first ones here at the Consumer Electronics Show. They introduced their Sync system 5 years ago, and it's really helped them sell cars. And here's one of the things: the cars have become so on par, and they've become so good. Most cars, you buy today. today, it's hard to, you can find a lemon out there, but, you know, the cars are very competitive. So if someone's shopping for a vehicle, safety, fuel economy, you know, those type of things are pretty on par. Technology is really what's tipping the scales. And particularly for younger drivers, interesting trend along with this is that driver's licensing is dropping across the country for young drivers.
You mean fewer people are getting licenses? They're just not driving?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's several things that go with that, but it's a trend that's happening. It's just way down. People, you know, my generation, you were 16, you were at the DMV getting your license. Kids today, you know, sound old, but every time I say that, it's just not as important to them. They would probably rather have an iPad or a video game console. So this stuff really appeals to, and we see it across the board. It's not just young people, but particularly, you know, and automakers, like a lot of people are chasing that market segment. But, and you know, all you have to do is look at how important technology is to people. People line up, you know, and to get iPads or iPhones.
What are the most interesting apps that you're seeing being offered now or coming on automobiles there in Vegas?
Well, it right here in Vegas this year, really, it's all about smartphone integration and apps. Because again, we all carry these devices with us. We're used to being connected 24/7 and getting, you know, information, entertainment, of course, social networking, those type of things. So it's almost like the cars is a dead zone, unless, you know, of course, people are going to be looking down at their phones, which we see that all the time anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So what automakers are really trying to do is integrate this stuff into vehicles because they know that people, you know, want it. They'll pay for it, and they also know that they have to do it in a way that's safe and non-distracting, and that's sort of the challenge.
Sort of, I should say. Nick in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Thanks for calling, Nick. You're on the air.
The Dodge Dart, amazing vehicle. It's got a giant 8.1-inch touchscreen. It's got all the tech in it. But yet the thing I find interesting about it is that it has the option of selecting your own gearbox, like as opposed to a automatic transmission, you can select a manual transmission as well.
Yeah.
And me being a young gearhead, I find this kind of, you know, there's still hope for those of us who still like to row our own gears and actually drive for fun. And I'm still relatively young at 25.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I like to think that there's still some hope for young people like us who actually want to get off of playing Gran Turismo or Forza and actually get out in the world drive cars ourselves.
Nick, I love it. Thank you for that call. Hiawatha Brahmi, the Dodge Dart is back. That's incredible in itself after all these years. But here's Nick who says, okay, great. You know, I know all about the video games, but I'm a gearhead. I want to feel the road. I want to drive. I want to get in the gearbox
I think you're hitting a very good question, and I honestly don't know the answer to it, but that is exactly right. We've heard that throughout with the callers. There are going to be people who just want to drive themselves. All you have to do is go to the newsstands. There is a whole legion of enthusiast car publications because there are millions of Americans who like to drive. They don't want to be driven. They want to sit in a car and drive. So any kind of automated system is going to have to allow for people to continue to control their own cars. I don't know, maybe you could have something like a system in which those who are driving themselves are still, you know, the car is automatically alerting people to their presence. Mm-hmm. And maybe a little thing flashes on your screen and says, look out, that guy's driving himself. Run, run.
Danger, danger.
Like that. But there's got to be a way to accommodate both.
Does all this come, Hiawatha, at the expense of other tech advances? Here's a listener, Dan, who says, this seems really cool and all, but don't we already have serious problems with distracted driving? How is adding the ability to check Facebook, post to YouTube, find a recipe for fried chicken from my vehicle going to help? I'd rather have a safer, more fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly vehicle. Thank you.
I mean, that's a very good point. And the guy was quoting over at MIT, Brian Reamer, is making the exact same point. Nobody has completely figured this out yet. They say, you know, we're going to control this or limit it. But precisely, when you bring a computer network into the car, well, we all know the whole reason we love our computer networks is they let us do virtually anything you can think of. And there's got to be some way to control how much of that you can do while driving, because while the cars are getting better and the computers are getting better, the human brain has not changed. It can only process so much information, and we can't have people sitting in their cars just trying to do everything at once. Nobody has entirely figured out how we're going to do that.
What about reliability? Here's a listener, Motivation, says all he wants is a two-door Acura Integra with a killer stereo. He's worried about overcomplication. He says he saw Wozniak, I guess Steve Wozniak, on C-SPAN one day back during the Toyota recall, and he said the gas pedal wasn't sticking, that it was a software malfunction, This listener says Fred Flintstone had it right, you know, with his ton of rock and moving with his feet and wheels alone. What about reliability when you get all this tech in there, Hiawatha?
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but from my experience, most electronic components are incredibly reliable. I mean, I worry less about the electronics in a car than I would about the gearbox or the engine.
Yeah, overall, yeah, yeah.
The key problem, though, and this is where they do have a point, is the software. That's where the problem always arises. It's relatively easy to write engine management software, nowadays anyway, because an engine is doing just one basic thing, and so the introduction of new bugs are much less likely. But when you start having cars crammed with software for doing countless different things, yes, you do run into a serious bug problem. Oh, and before we leave this subject, we ought to talk about something that worries me much more,
mm-hmm.
The security problem. What happens when our cars are all on networks, and that network can send commands to our vehicles? This network had better be very, very secure. Otherwise, you could imagine a hacker getting in and shutting off every Chevy in America with a push of a button. I mean, it's unlikely, but in theory, it could happen.
When you talk about traffic jams.
There you go.
That could be, Doug Newcomb, that could be the traffic jam to end all.
Yeah, and that we're actually been looking into that and have a story coming up on that. A couple of university researchers have shown that it's not that difficult to do. Well, it is, and you have to be pretty sophisticated, but, you know, I mean, that's what hackers do, right?
Yeah.
And automakers are just starting to pay attention to that. As Hiawatha said, it's a huge issue. I know McAfee is looking into it as well. It's like any technology, it's moving so quickly, and you know they're starting to figure out the security issues now. But that's one of the downfalls of this, and it has to be figured out because you know it's one thing if your computer crashes, you know, but obviously it's a much different thing when your car crashes.
I should say, Alfred in Winthrop, Massachusetts. Alfred, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Excuse my voice. I have a little chest congestion.
No problem.
But with most cell phones, there's dropouts, and maybe the possibility of a solar flare could also bring the system down, too.
Hiawatha, good point, Alfred. What do you say, Hiawatha?
Yep. That's an outstanding point. Any network, any system that relies on being constantly connected to a network, I mean, I'm sitting here in a hotel in Las Vegas, and I can barely get online. So there are places in the world where you're just not going to have very good network connectivity, and that's going to be a serious limitation. I was driving across Pennsylvania not too long ago and noticed that the cellular network, and a lot of this they're thinking is going to be working over the cellular 4G networks that they're building.
Yeah.
You drive down the interstate in large parts of Pennsylvania, there's no cellular network. There's nothing.
Goodbye, Facebook. Hey, our time is short, Hiawatha, but what about this? Yar says, wouldn't we be better off to get on a train with all the latest technology and have a stripped-down car for the last couple miles to the house? We spend way too much of our GDP on this kind of, you know, personalized transportation. What about the relative investment here?
The relative investment of building trains is incredible. I mean, there's this whole fuss now about the high-speed rail that they're building in California,
yeah,
going like tens of billions of dollars over budget. Trains are not cheap. They're insanely expensive nowadays. And most of us don't drive or travel in patterns that make a train a practical solution. I mean, for millions of us, a car is the only practical way to go. So I just don't see that as an option.
What are you going to be using most and first of the particular apps that you're seeing out there in Vegas, Hiawatha?
You mean of what? For cars? Or
yeah,
just for
cars. Cars, yeah, yeah.
Well, heck, I drive an old Ford. I'm not going to be using any of those things. But to tell you the truth, though, one of the interesting things is that they are developing aftermarket solutions to let you put some of this stuff in older cars. At least I understand that. I haven't had a chance to check them out yet. But the goal is to at least put stuff into an older car so that the car could, for example, communicate with the cars all around it. They're actually developing the technology so that you'll be able to put it in older cars, and you won't have all of the functionality of some of these more advanced cars, but you will at least be able to get, if you will, onto the network. So we're seeing stuff like that, certainly. And of course, then there are all the phone apps that allow these more advanced cars. You can sit, you know, remotely, turn on your car, warm up the motor, see what the fuel state is. Those have appeared for cars like the Chevy Volt, and you're going to see them for more and more kinds of cars as well.
Hiawatha Bray, you are cutting edge as always there in Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show. Hiawatha Bray with the Boston Globe. Thanks for joining us, Hiawatha.
Oh, thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about automakers and the internet merging on the American highway. Your next car as the web on wheels and all that that may mean. Doug Newcomb is with us from Las Vegas, where the Consumer Electronics Show is going on with lots of auto people in attendance, senior editor of the technology section at Edmunds.com. Also with us right now from Las Vegas is Jim Buskowski. He is Director of Research and Advanced Engineering at Ford Motor Company. Ford announced just last Friday they're opening a new research lab in Silicon Valley. Jim, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, help us think about this in terms of, I don't know, layers or generations. What's exciting that's right in front of us here, and what do you at Ford see then coming down the road as this merger moves forward?
Well, we've already launched and have in the field over 4 million customers with Sync. It's hands-free, allows you to keep your eyes on the road, hands on the wheels, be able to access your phone through voice commands. And My Ford Touch is an expansion of that that is a more immersive experience with additional things that you can control. We also have launched capability with Sync to interface to your smartphone and allow you to use some of your favorite apps like Pandora and iHeartRadio through voice commands. Those folks that really like their Pandora application, they can leave their phone in their pocket or somewhere else in the purse.
Internet radio, in effect.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And what about with all the entertainment? I mean, that's entertainment, and there's going to be video as well. How does this, you know, booming, exploding world of entertainment in the car sync up with good driving? Because we're not in this Valhalla yet where, you know, you don't even have to pay attention. The car will drive itself. We're not close to that. So how do you have all this new entertainment and Facebook updates and all the rest and be safe at the same time, Jim?
Well, we're very focused on driver distraction and do a lot of research in that area, a lot of testing potential customers and really different ways of accomplishing these tasks. It's really about keeping you focused on the number one thing, looking ahead, looking around you, being aware of cars around you, and so on. And that's why we talk so much about voice control and being able to speak commands and ask for what you want.
Do you see self-driving cars on the visible horizon? How many years out?
Well, it's really difficult to predict a horizon and timeline. They're certainly closer than we had thought in the past. Technology's changing rapidly. I think we'll see it in gradual phases. There are specific places where on freeways and long freeway drives and so on where are help. But, you know, one of the things I got to say is from a Ford position, the driver's always going to be in the loop. You know, we really want to make a safer, better driving situation, and we want to use technology to help keep the driver aware of all the conditions around him. So the driver's always going to be in the loop somewhere and available, just like a pilot in a plane is aware of everything his instrumentation tells him what's going on all around him.
Jim Buskowski is Director of Research and Advanced Engineering at Ford Motor Company. He's right in the middle of this. Doug Newcomb with Edmunds.com with us as well there in Vegas. Doug, we heard earlier how the U.S. automakers, Ford included, are gaining market share in this country for the first time in a long time on this tech front, this wired up, webbed up front. Are they leading? Are they in the middle of the pack? How's the U.S. competitively on this front, Doug?
Well, what I've seen in the past few years is the American automakers are actually, in some ways, in the vanguard. One kind of interesting trend I've noticed is, you know, we used to see a lot of the bells and whistles, the latest technology on the luxury makes. But in the last few years, I mean, BMW and Mercedes is here at the show. They have some really cool technology. But Ford has been really a pioneer with their Sync system. Chevy is coming out with their MyLink system. And Kia is here, too. They introduced their UVO system a couple of years ago, and they're showing a second generation of that. One interesting trend, and I know someone said earlier about the expense it adds to the cost. Some of this technology, Ford Sync, Kia Uvo is a good example, is really affordable. And in fact, you can almost get as good, if not better, technology on an affordable car, entry-level car, than you can on an expensive luxury car. And that's really a benefit to consumers. And that's really a big shift, as I said. And if this stuff is affordable, I've had people ask me, well, doesn't this add a lot to the cost of the car? It really doesn't in many cases. I was talking to someone from Kia yesterday. A lot of the services they're offering, like Ford Sync as well, are free to the driver for a certain period of time. So it's really kind of a big shift from what I'm seeing.
That's interesting. Jim Buskowski at Ford, a lot of listeners here leaning in. Samantha asks online, she says, the real discussion here should be about how the next generation is going to be able to afford these cars with the way the economy is today. She writes, as a 20-something, I think my generation may be sticking to bikes, as in bicycles, Jim. Is this adding a lot of new expense to cars? How do you make it affordable and have all the whiz-bang?
Well, you know, the really exciting part about electronics is the way it drives cost out and performance features and make them very affordable. And Doug's exactly right, is, you know, focusing on technology to deliver these great experiences. You know, we just expect and we've experienced the fact that the cost goes down year over year and we can offer more for the same or even less.
What about this? Daryl writes on Facebook, he could be reading this on his car dashboard one day soon. He says, maybe Rust doesn't work fast enough to make a car obsolete, but software updates can do it in 4 years or less. What about going obsolete on this front, Jim?
That's really the beauty, and I think he's accurate in talking about software and the way we can use software to upgrade vehicles and provide updates and continuous improvement, as well as in reaction, you know, get feedback from customers, make change, improve the product, but also add new features. So even cars on the road today have the opportunity to get new features. They don't have to wait to buy a new car to get some new features.
Let me get a call here from Amherst, New Hampshire, and Sean. Sean, you're on the air.
Hey Tom. Hey Tom. I think this is great. I'm really excited. I think there will be a lot of lives saved from this. You know, the car is such a dangerous piece of equipment now. It's probably the biggest threat to a 16-year-old boy or girl's life. And I think the entertainment is nice, but I think it's just the frosting on the cake and it's a distraction. I think the fact that we're finally getting a relook at the car and making it safer through technology, it's just real. I'm just really pumped about that.
Safer, you're thinking once cars, let's say, become aware of one another on the highway.
Yeah, I mean, things like the blind spot protection right now, the automatic stopping. I'm sure there'll be protections against erratic driving. I'm not worried about people, you know, checking their Facebook status. I think the human, you know, preservation gene kicks in, and people have learned their lesson, I think, over the last few years, and I think there's a lot less distracted driving happening.
Well,
it needs to be less, of course, but
yeah.
I'm not too worried about that.
So you're hopeful, and that's good to hear, Sean. Not everybody's. Let me get one more right here. Sharon in Colchester, Vermont. Sharon, you're on the air. Hi, Sharon. Are you there? Oh, we lost Sharon. Let's go to Reuben in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Reuben, you're on.
Thanks, Greg. I work for a telecom company, and what I'm seeing for people who are coming in to purchase cell phones, you get the two types, one in particular who wants to be connected, who wants technology. They're looking for the technology to make their lives easier, more efficient, save them money. And I can only see where the car companies are just meeting that same demand. And in response, we've already been seeing applications on the phones to make the phones safer while the car is moving. So I can't see any stretch of difficulty here where they could make the same thing where there's interrupting technology, distracting that, you know, we're all talking about, be something that they can easily control.
So,
There are always going to be folks who don't want the technology. We still, after many years of you know, the evolution of the technology impacting the cell phone industry, we see basic phones still out there, and they have been improving them, longer battery lives.
Reuben, you raise a couple of points on demand for this and also just expectations. And, Jim, let me bring that one to you. I mean, what is your sense of what the market's expectation or demand is going to be, you know, this year, next year, 5 years down the road in terms of full wired cloud integration with the car? Is that just going to be, you know, baseline demand?
Absolutely. Customers are are gaining these new experiences in their vehicle that are making things more pleasant, more efficient, and so on. And I think that, and we're already seeing certainly from the early launches of Sync and MyFord Touch that as they get the hands-free operation, by the way, we are a strong supporter of hands-free only, mm-hmm. No text messaging, just hands-free operation, voice control, and so on. But
yep.
They get used to these features. They're beneficial to them, and as they look at their next vehicles, they've got to have them. So we see increasing. Now we've got to do it in a safer way, and that's why we're very focused on using technology and finding technology to allow these experiences to occur in a car in a safe way.
We've been hearing that the real safety breakthrough, maybe the transformational point, is when cars start to talk to one another, which lets them watch out for one another and maybe even allows the self-driving car future or really facilitates it. But here's a listener who writes that he'd like to hear what happens if and when not all cars are networked. Seems to me, he writes, that even if a few cars on the road lack the networking capability, then the point of having the networking capability is moot. What about that, Jim? There's clearly going to be a long transition time when not every car out there is out on the tech frontier.
Absolutely, that there will have to be solutions to help retrofit vehicles so that we can accelerate the car-to-car and car-to-infrastructure, car-to-highway communication. This is going to start off really focused on driver assistance, helping drivers have better awareness around them and recommending, the system, having an awareness of an approaching vehicle or whatever and giving some feedback to the driver so he can make some better decisions. So it will be gradual. We'd like to accelerate as much as possible. We'll put the tools in place and support tools in place to retrofit vehicles as well. Hmm. But, getting to 100% will take a little bit of time and working, of course, with our counterparts, other OEMs, as well as the government on how we can help move it along.
Let's get a call from New York, Potsdam, New York. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I heard your one guest talk about keeping the driver in the loop with the driverless vehicles, but in upstate New York, we have unexpected hazards quite a bit. At night, we have to be very alert for deer on the side of the road, which can dart out very quickly from
sure.
20 yards off the road, and suddenly they're in front of you.
Yep.
I'm curious how responsive the systems are to those types of hazards, and currently I'm in the middle of an ice storm. I'm on the side of the road, but I've seen two cars fishtail, and sometimes there literally can be no traction if we're having a significant ice storm, and I'm kind of curious again how that driverless technology would adapt to that, or whether in those types of conditions, you just have to turn it off and still drive as a driver.
Or even with a driver. Tom, let me take that to Jim in Las Vegas. Okay, ice, snow, and darting deers, Jim. What can you do for us with your software package?
Well, I'm from Michigan, so I know about ice and snow. Let me give you an example of car-to-car kind of communication, and I think your listener in New York also experiences this as well, too, where you have ice patches on the road ahead of you. Imagine vehicles ahead experiencing those ice patches and being able to talk to the vehicles maybe a half mile back and saying at this mile marker, at this position on the road, the GPS location, there's ice in the right-hand side. It's better to stay in the left-hand side. Again, as a driver assistance feature to help drivers get around or deal with changing conditions. Right?
How would that work, Jim? Just for example, is it going to then voice to me, get in the left lane, or is it just going to take me to the left lane?
Well, we haven't really decided necessarily. And that's part of the research is to look to the best way to what we call human-machine interface, best feedback to the driver. We do have lane departure, lane keeping features, and we'll see. We'll have to see how the best way is to manage that. We haven't made decisions around that yet.
Doug Newcomb, does this move the heart or the brain of Detroit to tech centers around the country, Silicon Valley, Route 128, you name it?
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned earlier, the automakers are really looking at this very seriously. That's why they're here at CES, because they know that technology is really something that appeals to consumers. And as Jim mentioned, the safety features, that we're going to see a whole new level of safety from connected cars. The sort of Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff sort of gets the headlines, and it's controversial, of course. course, but really what do people have to keep in mind is that the connectivity, like a lot of technology or any technology these days, it adds a lot of benefits. The example of a connected car where you know if there's a hazard in the road, if there's an accident. Google has been really on the advent of the autonomous driving vehicles, and they've logged 140,000 miles in California roads with one accident. That's when a human driver back-ended a Google vehicle. I also heard someone talking about in California, we have these really bad incidents with fog in the Central Valley, these huge pileups. They happen all the time, at least yearly, it seems like. It's tragic.
Yeah.
Loss of life. And if I heard someone from CHP mentioning that when they responded to the accidents, they could still hear cars piling up in the back because the drivers couldn't see.
It would be nice to get away from
that. If it was a Google self-driving car, it would be aware to know that there's cars stopped ahead.
Joe, we've got a listener asking, what about when your car's networked? Private companies or the government using that for their advantage. Insurance companies, spike rates. They don't like the way you drive. Courts disable your car if you're late on a parking ticket. I don't know. What about privacy in all this, Jim?
Oh, it's very important, and we're looking very carefully at what the best way to do. Many of these features and experiences are certainly going to be opt-in for customers, so they're not going to be forced to use them and so on. But we're paying a lot of attention to security, personal information. But I would say that the next generation of experiences really will benefit for more information about you so that we can tune and create the best experience for you. But our goal is really using that information for your experience, not providing it to others, selling it to others, and so on. It's about providing the information or using that your information to create the best experience for you.
Hey, our time is short, but does all this tech advancement come at the expense of fuel efficiency advances? I mean, people would like to see 50, 60, 70 miles a gallon cars out there, and instead we get Facebook pages?
Well, I'll tell you that we just revealed at the Consumer Electronics Show with Gary Shapiro and Alan Mulally the Fusion Energy that'll achieve 100 miles per gallon. But even the technology we're talking about, connectivity, will help you provide better use of that. So, for example, specifically on a hybrid vehicle, when's the best time to be using the gas portion, gas-powered portion, versus the electric portion? So this technology has the ability to help create more fuel-efficient vehicles as well.
It's all coming at our windshields right now. Jim Buzkowski, Director of Research and Advanced Engineering at Ford Motor Company. Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Doug Newcomb with Edmunds.com in Las Vegas. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. Happy driving. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.